Is that it?
Yeah, let's go.
And Senator Hurd, President of the Senate.
And we have some others. We're in a meeting that's probably get an opportunity to meet the Senate President, the Speaker of the House, when he comes in here, and the two minority leaders. So you get a whole package. Actually, what you're looking at then would be the legislative and executive branch. Seen some of you in prison. I have to tell you one thing. When I saw you last, I was at St. John, and for the first time realized that my high school, Washington High School, was no longer successful. Now you have something going on?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. You get sidetracked. Do you have that room?
Sure.
All right.
Portland Rose Festival in 1982.
really very neat. I think that's great. I'm not sure some of you know that my wife was a chaperone for Clark 1973. So, be nice. She does a. She would like to have been here, but yesterday she got a bad cold, and she said she was sorry that she couldn't make it. I'll tell you that. You have something else going? Is that it?
We could do the other in a pad.
Stuff that you have on now is which one? What's the highest factor? Javelin or?
No, my back.
How many outfits do you have?
About 13, 15.
Yeah, 19. Yeah. I think that's great. You know, I'm going to see you at the parade. Where is the rest of our
He's representing Paul
Hanneman. Are they, this is representing Paul Hanneman, and he's the public leader.
Those guys, what you got?
Pass the mark. That's mine.
Governor, describe.
Governor, do you know yet whether you're going to call a special session?
No, we haven't gotten to that point yet. We haven't even talked about it. That's, as I say, still a probability, but I think everything's going very well.
How would you describe the atmosphere?
Very good.
What are you, at some point going to have to involve the state employee unions in terms of a reduction in the work week for state employees?
That's hard to tell you right now. What we have is all the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that
trying to that's one of them. And balancing back and forth and seeing which direction we want to go and what might be greatest likelihood and that kind of thing. But it's going very well.
Do you have any idea of what you've agreed upon so far?
We haven't come to that point yet. I mean, we haven't said what are we going to do, because one element always works against another element, and so we're just kind of narrowing down the possibilities, put some things on and kind of pass some by, and it's working well.
Anything rolled out yet?
No. Not really, not at this point. I think basically ruled out, but I don't think we've said we rule this out. But I get a sense you're asking me without a judgment vote. There have been some things ruled out, but not overtly.
Well, what's been ruled out?
Oh, well, I don't want to tell you what's all on up there. I'm just saying what I think, so we haven't taken any votes on
that. How is it that there's still, in your mind, some doubt about calling a special session?
There's no, I would say, in doubt.
That I beg your pardon?
I didn't say there was a doubt. I'd say we had just hadn't talked about that.
There's
we hadn't got
no
to
doubt
that.
You will call a special
no,
session.
No, no, we just haven't talked about it yet. That's not been part of the conversation. I would have to tell you that the likelihood, as I told you before, is very good that I'll call a special session.
Are you satisfied that they're ready to compromise?
Oh, I think the whole atmosphere has been that to begin with. I put some things on there that are possibilities. They added some things and possibilities, and we've been talking about it. And I must say it's been a very cooperative attitude.
Governor, when might you make a decision on calling a special session? Today?
Well, I think it's moving well enough. It would look to me like we would probably make some decision, yes, today. It's just moving very well. Now, they may want to say, look, I have to go back and see our caucuses. We haven't gotten to that point yet.
How much longer are you going to meet this morning, Governor?
Oh, I don't know. Probably recess to lunch or something. I don't know. It's moving much better than I had any hope to believe it would. It's going very good. Okay.
We've got a blip in our compromise. Who's going to stand on the right or left?
All right, I got ready. We're going to sing a song. Hi, I'm Paul. And this is Stephanie.
I want that on an outtake. The process that I called together today, I think, has worked extremely well. The idea of getting the leadership together and discussing all the possible alternatives to arriving at a balanced budget with the new shortfall is, I think, a very fruitful one and will prove, I believe, to shorten any special legislative session. We spent a lot of time looking at alternatives. We have now arrived at a compromise that the leadership feels comfortable in taking to their caucuses to see if a consensus opinion can be reached. I will call a special session. However, the date of that special session will not be pinpointed until I'm assured that, in fact, there is a consensus position. The time period will be somewhere between the 14th and the 21st of June, not necessarily those days. It could be a day in the middle of that. And that is the broad time frame that we have agreed might be appropriate. The way we have reached this compromise would call for the agency budgets about $30 million. 10 of that would be direct cuts in the services, and the balance of 20 would be in
alternatives to layoffs.
The alternatives to layoffs. In any events, I was trying to think of the in the personnel part of it. We'll look at basic school support and property tax relief. However, we have some considerations for ameliorating the possibility of any basic school support relief. Looking also at what would might be considered a revenue side, in other words, how much money we expected. In looking at the forecast that was given to us, it came evident that our Department of Revenue and the IRS are not in sync on changing of withholding tables. If we then go from July 1 to July 1, which they do, that would mean within this biennium period of time, the balance of the dollars would come in to this biennium to balance that budget. It would leave us then with a ending balance of about $7 million. I have to tell you that everyone came to that meeting in a spirit of cooperation and compromise. The plan I just laid out for you, it doesn't represent the contribution of any one, but all of us. Everyone made some suggestions in regard to how that budget might be balanced. I would say it's fair to say that if any one of us were writing it all together, it might show up differently than that, but I think they all agreed that we need to look at a way we can do it in compromise form and quickly as possible. And I think we've arrived at that, at least in terms of that they feel comfortable to take it to their caucus. I think with that then, I'm here to answer questions, and of course any of the leadership is as well.
Have you put a price tag on transfer payments?
It amount to about $40 million.
That would be both basic school and property tax? Would
That's correct.
Combined.
How much would you get from would we call it a withholding speed act? Or what is it this time?
A delay of the withholding tables, that would be about $34 million.
Could you explain that, the delay of the withholding tables? This would not be the same as procedures you've taken in the past, that you've taken in the past?
Our withholding tables in the federal is, as we've understood some, every time they make a change in the withholding tables, whether it's ours or the federal, it is oftentimes expensive to do just that. If we're in sync with them, them meaning the federal. In other words, both do it at the same time. It's much more convenient. On the other hand, of course, it does have some impact on the taxpayer, but that we don't know because obviously if there is an over-withholding, then if they can apply for a refund and get it back. We don't know what that would be. We just know what would come into this biennium.
What would the revenue measure be? You mentioned
That should all balance out to come up with an ending balance of close to $7 million. There's $30 million approximately in the agency budgets, $40 million. I don't have all my mathematics. $40 million in the transfer payments, and $34 million in the withholding. That should add up.
What's the alternative to layoffs?
Short.
That could vary, actually, with agencies. Yes, one of them would be potential of shortened work week, maybe giving up holiday pay, pay without pay. Some younger people may want not to pay in the PERS. There's a variety of them. That has not been accurately defined because we want a lot of flexibility within the agencies to deal with.
Will that require a reopening of the contracts, renegotiation of the contracts, or reopening, whichever?
Let me only say to you, Paul, that I think it's appropriate that we should talk to the unions. Whether legally that is something that needs to deal with the contract, I'm not prepared to say, because we have several different contracts with several different unions. However, I'm convinced it would, of necessity, call for a conference with the unions.
Accounted for $104 million in your totals here.
Ellen, I'm not exactly right.
Is that the figure that you're working with?
I think the combined figure on the basic and property tax relief was more like 43.
43.
That's where you, I think that's where your discrepancy is.
Well, that does, that leaves no ending balance, so that would make it exactly $107 million.
It started with the $7
million.
Sorry? Starting with the $7 million ending balance.
$7 million.
So actually, the deficit is $101 million.
$100 million and something.
Yes, that's right. We do have the ending balance to start with.
This would keep about the same ending balance that we have now.
Do I take it that you each support this plan? Or you're just taking it to your caucuses?
Oh, I think the latter rather than the former. Some of our members, I'm certain, are going to consider this a smorgasbord with virtually nothing but lemon wedges as an offering. But I am pledged to take this program as a unit package to the caucus and say this is it. If there's not support for this, then we as a unit here must start over. Now, the expression will be yours one by one on this program.
Are you saying that you do not necessarily support it, but are simply conveying this plan to your
think office? Each of the House Republican caucus members would have some variations they would prefer, but that is not the question that will be before them. I'm no different than the other members of the Republican caucus. There are portions of this that I would have shifted and changed, but that's not the question before us. It's this one. This is the one that I agreed was one that the five of us could meet with some unity on. Therefore, this is the one that I take, and this is the one that I'm pledged to say this is the best we can do at this time.
When will your caucuses all have their meetings and vote?
I expect to begin making a series of conference calls to the members of the Senate this afternoon.
A phone poll of your
yes.
I'm going to try to contact members of the House by that means.
When will you all get back together again as members?
Our intention is sometime.
It's not hard to make seven phone calls.
Our caucus. It's our intention to make contact, whether it's a meeting or a phone call, early next week.
Governor, how firm a commitment do you want? Do you want names?
We're facing the reaper.
What I want is a consensus. I'm not sure that we have to sit down and count, although that would be very desirable if that were the case, 31 and 16. If there's a consensus and the leadership is leading that consensus, that and I'm satisfied, there's good faith there and we can move forward with it.
Well, let me ask you, are you going to, with your respective caucuses, are you going to fight for this plan? Are you going to urge your members to support it?
Let me,
or are you just going to say this is the best we can do?
Let me indicate that given the situation in terms of the philosophical and political balance of the legislature that I intend, as I make contact with the senators, to indicate my support for the program, and that I think that we had a cross-section of the Legislative Assembly in the meeting today. We were able to consider the expressed concerns that the senators mentioned to me and that representatives and senators mentioned to the other members of the meeting, and that while, like the governor said, there might be some portions that one would write differently if they were doing it on their own. I think this is the most realistic plan that we can hope for in the special session, and so I intend on trying to sell the program.
That's my position also as to the House Democrats. I intend to urge their support of this proposal as a total package. I might add, too, that when we started the last session, I think the major issue separating the governor and many members of the Assembly was the question of fairness in the spreading of the cuts themselves. And I'm going to go to my members on the basis that I think this package, which the governor supports also, is, I think, a fair way to try to deal with the cutting that has to occur.
May I, just before you ask a further...
I'm sorry, Governor. I'm going to say that this is the best we can do, and you know what the alternative is, and that's a delay of undetermined amount of time to try to arrive at a new plan which may gain no more support than this one. And after a year or more of our caucus going into great detail with the alternatives, I would expect that there'll be support for the plan because the alternatives aren't good.
Governor, you talked about ameliorating basic school support. What is the plan for that, please?
We're looking at some count in terms of the number of students that are, again, not registered. We're looking at that again in terms of the total figures that might come out of basic. I want to say this, if I may, that this, I think, is rather an important meeting. This is an idea that I thought that would be the best way to approach the problem, to get the leadership here. We've worked at it. They all worked in very good faith. It's clear whenever you try to reach a compromise, instead of being any one of our plans, my plan, your plan, or someone else's, we decided we were going to try to arrive at a reasonable compromise to take to caucuses. Those are the terms I used. I think it's fair to say that they agree it's a reasonable compromise to take to caucus. We'll have to wait and see now what the result of that might be, and we'll be talking with them early next week.
Similar situation where you call in revenue and ways and means a week in advance?
That's something that we hope to discuss next week, and we'll have to see just how heavy the agenda is.
But what will be the new cap on the property tax relief with this plan?
$220 maximum from...
What will be the percentage of basic then compared to now? What,
About 3% less, I think that's correct, 3% less. That's not correct?
No, not if you put the other money back. It's not
that. Yeah, what did you say back? 1.5%. Yes. 1.5% less.
The 1.5% cut from where we are now?
Correct.
We are what, 34 now? 36?
I'm trying to get a signal from back there.
34. 1.5%.
You still seem a little reluctant. Do you actually support this plan, or are you saying that you'll just simply take
it? I'm making a sincere effort to gather as much support in the caucus as I can for it, because the members know the alternatives, and I'm going to make sure that they know the alternatives, and that's virtually starting with another one which may gain no more support than this one. So I'm going to make a sincere effort.
Senator Beaker, do you support the
country? Well, you know, there's something to be said about saving the taxpayers a whole bunch of money by keeping a very short special session. Because of the support given by the majority party and by the governor on this program, I see a need to keep the special session as short as possible. For that reason, I'm going to carry the plan to my caucus and attempt to convince them that this is the way out.
Governor, could you be a little more specific on some of those $20 million in alternatives to layoffs, maybe?
I think I answered the question. To be specific, really would amount to what the best those alternatives might be. By that, I think I described there's a variety of ways to get the job done, and there may be more than even those I described. Unpaid vacation, shortened work week. Some young people may not need a PERS contribution. You know, there's a variety of things, and I know it goes beyond that. So, eliminating paid holidays. There's a number of ways it can be done. So, for me to be more descriptive, I can't. We should talk with the unions and see what might best suit their purpose, and the agency, incidentally, that are involved. Some are small, some are large.
What about the $10 million? Where is that coming from?
We didn't talk in terms of where that might be. That would amount to a further 1.5% cut. We feel that we can find that in different places. We didn't spend time going through budgets to arrive at that.
Would you again go over the division of the transfer payments? It's $43 million in total, and part of that would be dropping the cap to $220, and that would raise how much? Do you remember? I know it's
$30 million.
$30 million. And the rest of the drop in school support would raise $13 million.
Correct. Yeah. Now, that you understand, that may be varied depending on when we look at student count and things of that kind, but At the present time, that looks like Lisa.
Yeah. Did you feel you mentioned the Collins Gleeful question?
Which?
No, Collins Gleeful.
I think we're going to stay with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's been a tendency, both on the part of the forecasters and the business community generally, to, it's easy to say this in retrospect, to be more optimistic or less pessimistic, if you will, about the Reagan economic policy that was warranted. And as the logical implications of sort of perpetual cuts in taxes way in excess of spending cuts and what that means to financing costs have come clear, particularly in a period of now of declining inflation, which would otherwise be good news, just a tremendous cutback in people's spending. Last time I was asked to talk about this, I went back and looked at the 75 recovery and what happened to the money supply, which rose quite sharply from the trough. Then the next recovery was in 79. The money supply didn't rise, and of course we had a very slow recovery. And it just seems, looking at this, and that's what Otto said to me yesterday as well, that this kind of tight money policy is something we've never really experienced.
During
the expansion, that as we come out of the expansion, if it seems likely we turn the quarter sometime next quarter, then businessmen will discover that they're a little low on inventories, and when they all try to catch up, there just won't be the financing available. And you have to wonder, it's certainly possible that there wouldn't, that the recovery would stop.
And along the lines, for the same reason, I guess what surprises me is that I'm surprised that DRI doesn't have lower housing starts for exactly the same reasons you just mentioned for the businessman. That is, you've got mortgage rates never dropping below 15.4 or 5 or somewhere in there, very high mortgage rate, and yet you have a 33% increase in housing starts over the next 2 years to 1.5 million housing starts. And I'm wondering why the consumer isn't going to go through exactly the same disinflation syndrome that the businessman is going through, that in terms of, if these high rates and, in fact, in housing, falling prices, deflation, that it's not the place to put your money.
More specifically, then, among the housing analysts, when I posed this to Rick Gold the last time, he passed it on to Alan Sinai. But I'd like to try it again. Most of the housing analysts, and I appreciate the wide range of competence and knowledge among them, feel that until the new home mortgage rates get down to 12 to 13% range, we really don't get much of a jump in national housing starts. That's the first point. And the problem is, we don't, at least in your forecast, and Horton and Chase, Horton's even gloomier, Chase is about the same on the new home mortgage rates through 83 and 84, not getting down in maybe the mid-14s at best. And yet, on the latest forecast, granted they've been dropping steadily each time, we still have a jump in 1983 of 1.4 million starts. And yet, we look back in the previous housing cycles, the new home mortgage rate has to get down quite a bit more than 15.1, which is what precipitates this. And either something basic has changed in the relationship, or something's wrong in this estimate. And when Rick posed it to Sinai and said, look, is there a different relationship? The answer was, in effect, no. And so I'm led to suspect that this is too optimistic given the interest rate you're forecasting, or overestimating what the interest rates are going to be in 1983.
Before you respond, Ed, I've tried a similar idea, Ed, pragmatically on people actually in the business.
Oh, exactly.
It's 12:30, and you probably have two, and I get
right.
That same answer.
That's right. That's exactly the response I get.
Yeah, Ray, did you want to add something?
Well, just a point, and it's well taken.
on the forest product simulation, which we don't subscribe to, but with some
it has through fourth quarter 1983, but the final report will have fourth quarter 1985. And we have reduced throughout the forecasting period.
Would you like to know the magnitude of that reduction?
Well,
Nineteen's history. Not the same history as I have, but
you don't have the breakdown of lumber and wood products on that report, right? It just says
that's
lumber.
Right.
It just says lumber
and wood. There are three equations in the model.
Right.
On lumber and wood, the 90% of the it turns out that 90% of it is based on or a function directly or indirectly of housing starts. So this housing starts is the main determinant. The null or the model unmanaged forecast for plywood and veneer had growth at 18 to 19% through the end of this year. We thought we reduced that growth for 1982 to 8% from close to 19%.
Let me just make sure I understand. On page 20, that means for the percentage change in lumber and wood products employment, the numbers we see here say for the third quarter 82 of 15.5, that's lower than what would have been.
Yes.
By
several points, I would say. What we did, we kept in plywood and veneer, instead of the peak of employment in the last part of 1979 was 24,600. This is an example. And the model, the DRI model, had it regaining that peak next in early 84, which we don't think is reasonable at all, given the number of plant closures and technological change. So that our management of the model keeps the total of about 22,000 over the long term, rather than the several thousand below what the model itself would have predicted. In other veneer and other wood products, we did the same thing. It had a forecast of between 13 and 17% through the first quarter of next year. We reduced that rate of growth to 8%. So. And that is based on the opinion that the 1982 forecast of housing starts by DRI is too robust, in our opinion.
Right.
And it, yeah.
Is this sheet?
Yes.
Is that the original forecast, or is that yours?
That's the peak.
80,000 feet. 79,
yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's
79. I'm sorry. Okay. I said my.
Yeah, we should have drawn a line there. That was just for some educational, to show you that this,
okay.
this is in fact a pessimistic
scenario.
Okay. So, although there was another problem in other wood products, is there's a structural problem. The model consistently underestimates by about 600, so we end up adding 600 there. So we reduced in. Plywood and veneer, added in what's called millwork. But in net, we significantly reduced the rate of growth, so that it's hard to say what our implicit forecast of housing starts is.
That's right.
We can't get it out, but it is an implicit forecast which reduces it by.
I forget the equations for those things. Do they include housing starts and the National SIC Code production, or just the National SIC?
Just,
so you had to change.
Just housing starts. It doesn't. You know, the models, the other regional models run on the national the indices. And it's interesting because I can't say that I understand this completely, but the forecast for the industrial production in SIC 24 increases from 81 to 82 at about 10%, whereas housing starts increased by 50%. So that there seems to be some, what I would, just my naive
analysis, yes, means that those two things are inconsistent, and if the specification of the equations were different, we would have had a very different projection to begin with.
Why don't you be honest?
Probably. Washington and Idaho use the other specification, and they're also not comfortable.
Housing starts?
They don't use housing starts. They use industrial production. We use housing.
Well, you use housing starts.
Right. That's why we're uncomfortable.
Oh,
well, then we could. But if we use housing starts, then we could translate our numbers back into the model and find out what housing starts is implied.
Well, that's. I don't know that we could do that. I'm saying that's what's difficult to find out what that implicit forecast is.
Well, the difference is probably because the starts go up faster than the actual production, and that may be why you're having this problem.
But over the long, the long run projections are not similar at all either, though. Housing starts increasing by 50% per year.
It's just solving for one variable if you plug the numbers back in.
Let me interrupt. I think you had your hand up.
Sorry.
I was off into consumer expectations, entirely different subject.
You wanted to say that.
Does that answer the question about housing starts?
Yes.
Now, do you want to talk about consumer expectations?
Well, yes. DRI seems to have taken as a fairly firm given that business investment is locked up and going to stay locked for some time. And I have no quarrel with that. I'm wondering what DRI's perception is of consumers' investment planning and general outlook. I don't see that here very explicitly, and maybe it isn't dealt with.
The notion is that consumers, it's hard to imagine that there won't be a significant recovery in consumer spending with the tax cut, because consumer balance sheets are substantially restored.
That would have to be supported by rather favorable consumer expectations about what lies beyond them.
Recent surveys indicate that even though, well, in fact, the latest Michigan surveys had the highest number of consumers in the last 7 years saying that they expected rising real income, but it didn't. It had one of the lowest numbers for people who thought they'd take on debt or purchase new goods. So that so far they haven't reacted to it. So far, there's still, I think all the press on budget deficits and everything else has added to that.
Yeah. The fact that the inflation rate has fallen hasn't gone through to the consumer. They haven't got that message.
My wife blames it, haven't.
If there's fear of bankruptcy at the corporate level, what about fear of related or comparable problems at the personal level?
I think there's a difficulty here, which is that as you get to this phase of the recession, it's hard to imagine it will ever turn around. There's a terrific momentum of forecasts, not just economists, but businessmen.
That's not new.
No.
It's the darkness before the light, so to speak.
No, but what I'm getting at is that if a forecaster is to be right, I'm not saying we are, of course, but if you are to be right as you come around the corner, you have to say things that seem awfully unlikely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess Otto's view would be that here you've got people whose borrowing is not burdensome compared to where it's been, particularly if you correct for people who run up their master charge and then pay it all the same month. Not a good idea. that even though our wives may not have reported this to us, inflation is falling more than wages. And then you have this prospect of a 10% cut in withholding combined with at least temporarily low inflation. It's not wildly implausible to think that people's perceptions will get much more favorable.
It's not wildly implausible.
Well, I mean, I agree with Ray's comment. I think it's just impossible to say. It could obviously go either way. There are a lot of, in the case of the consumer, the real world evidence suggests that there ought to be a rebound in spending. But there is a cycle. Nobody can deal with the psychological fear. I mean, if you were a Brannett pilot a month ago, you would have been well to control your spending. And now if you're a Republic pilot, I suppose you're probably worried about it. Certainly if you're working for Harvester, the fact that your wages may be going up faster than inflation is hardly a reason to go out and spend your income tax.
Right. Let me just talk about the group of consumers in here, or alleged forecasters, including you, Ed, for a minute. And I'm curious about a pattern that we've had since November, or including November and February. And what I did was go back and look at our preliminary forecast we got. and then our collective reaction to those in November, then February, and now I'm wondering what we're going to do now. In November, except for one or two who shall remain unnamed for a moment, most people were comfortable with the preliminary forecast. It remained fairly, pretty much the same between the preliminary and final. In February, however, there was at least a majority of optimists, and we increased, not decreased, the preliminary forecast. That is, the managing of the model that we collectively imposed on Rick was to increase this stuff on Lang Chan. Sort of an underlying current here is that with this preliminary, we may be comfortable with the preliminary. I feel like I get this impression that we're tending to the downside. I'm curious especially about Ray and Kevin. What has changed since February? Then you were more optimistic than the preliminary forecast. Get the impression you may be on or below the preliminary forecast now.
I'm not below it. And in fact, from exactly the same reasons Ed talked about, I think what Ray and I have been attempting to do is call the turn. At the point, you're always sort of out on a limb at the point of calling the turn, and you can't call it exactly. I think for the same reasons it was argued that it's darkest before the dawn, et cetera, the interest rate forecasts are too high. I'll tell you what I think has caused some of the problems in the forecast over the last couple of months is the budget negotiations, the total breakdown of them, or no hope for budget negotiations, has impacted the financial markets severely. Whether the budget deficit has any impact at all doesn't make any difference because everyone believes it does right now. But secondly, I think it's unrealistic to forecast a 15% flat prime for the next 3 years, which is what DRI has done in essence, within give or take 50 basis points. I think you'll see a much different pattern than that. I'd be willing to do a control forecast versus another one, and one could even have rising rates, but one would have significantly falling rates. And I think that this forecast, in fact, is sort of a fool me once, shame on me, shame on you type thing, and they're now, everybody has hedged interest rate forecasts to be flat forever. Because everyone is afraid to try and call them either going significantly down because everybody's been burned over the last year, or calling them, it's also, if you're a doom and gloomer, you always call them to go up, as Kaufman does. So that, in fact, I think this forecast is still, it's surprising to me. I guess I can't agree with it or disagree with it because I agree with parts of it and disagree with other parts of it. I don't think it's internally consistent in many cases. For instance, the interest rates, I do not believe in their model, are consistent with the housing starts in their model. But I don't believe that their interest rate forecast is right. So that gives me a problem in saying, and then translating into Oregon's economy and saying, I agree or disagree. That's been my problem all along. I haven't agreed with DRI's model, so therefore I can't tell you what I think about the Oregon.
But we had the same conditions in both November and February, and yet the group here, at least as a whole, the majority, went for an increase over the preliminary.
Mine was very simple. Mine was based on the interest rate decline. And I think the reason the interest rate decline has been held up is quite simply the budget negotiation. I think they will fall over the next couple of months if there is a budget resolution. I think they could fall as much as 200 basis points.
That's the resolution.
And there might not be. And that's the question in there. And I get very pessimistic if there's no budget resolution at all. I think we're going to have trouble in the financial markets. If there is a budget resolution, then, and we see declining deficits over the next few years, probably hitting the peak in 83, but then declining from there on out, I think we could find interest rates falling, because I think the exact comments that were made in terms of a pessimism about business investment and inventory translates right back into the issue of falling credit demand.
What makes you think the deficits are going to fall after?
Your forecast hasn't fallen after 83.
Well, I know, but if the Congress doesn't do anything,
I'm saying that Congress is going to do something.
Well, Congress has already done something. And I spent two trips back to Washington last month, and it's very, very clear that the credit markets are being eased, the tensions are being eased somewhat by the fact that on every side of the aisle, people are focusing on a reduction. Well, first of all, 100 billion deficit, 83, and subsequent reductions each year. Now, whether they'll actually meet those numbers, probably very doubtful. But the point is, everybody back there perceives that it must be done. Credit markets perceive that they perceive this, and therefore I can't accept DRI's rising deficits, you know, and before they fall. But the rising deficits are consistent with your high interest rate forecast.
Everybody there perceives it must be done except one person.
Right.
Everybody back there perceives that this must be done. Of course, you may detail how it's going to get done, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that budget deficits,
that they may
reach a peak in the fiscal 83. We're talking about subsequent declines, significant declines through 85. That's the objective. And so it isn't, I think it isn't two Irishmen, you know, at loggerheads. They're all in agreement. It's just a question of how it's going to get done. It will get done. The fact that it may not come to an agreement until December or January of next year is immaterial to the credit market. It would be helpful if they could do it right now.
It is very material in the way we're doing our Oregon forecast, though.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying is that what DRI's basis here for these budget deficits that actually rise to what, 124 billion or something, if you assume that, then you get interest rates something like that. But I don't think, in spite of that, that DRI has fully factored in the impact of the savings rate that Otto has touched on in the current summary. I mean, these are very high numbers, and consequently can accommodate the government's needs for funds when the consumer is going to be pretty mild, and business is going to be very mild in its capital spending and all the rest.
Let me ask you a question on the savings rate. If you had, not, obviously you wouldn't do such a thing, but if you had your house painted and you paid cash, a bunch of college students who had no intention of reporting, then their income is of course not reported in the GMP.
Mm-hmm.
But your expenditure on them is also not recorded in the GMP. Mm-hmm. So as far as the GMP accounts are concerned, you've saved them.
Nothing here.
Right. So, I mean, I read Otto's argument twice. And as I try to play GMP count, which I'm not very good at, I'm not entirely sure he's right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not convinced by Otto's argument, but I do think the savings rates are missing.
Well, he is acknowledging the hidden economy.
No, that's my point.
Well, he says so right in here.
The hidden economy is there, and he's acknowledged it.
Okay.
However, he's also saying that because of the hidden economy, you've understated the savings rate. When you ignore the hidden economy, you understate both consumption and income. Therefore, it's not clear to me that you understate the savings rate.
Okay, take your national income and product accounts, 26% dollar number higher first quarter of this year compared with last. I don't care which way you want to cut it. People are saving very heavily for very understandable reasons. And when Otto projects here that there will be a delayed reaction to the tax cut of July 1, he's probably right.
Is that good news or bad news? If we all keep saying tax cut, there won't be a recovery.
Just a moment. What we're looking for is what's going to happen, and then we'll assess it accordingly. So I don't think we should evaluate that as good or bad.
No, I'm teasing you. I think we all have this problem. In the very short run, you have to assume that the savings rate does not go up or you don't get any recovery at all. Then in the medium run, you have to assume that it stays up because otherwise you have another credit. So what I'm saying, you have to be very careful about specifying what you believe and making sure it's consistent over time.
I agree, particularly when the official method of accounting for savings, that rate is subject to historically gross adjustments.
Still having trouble with consumer expectations, even after all this. It seems to me that the DRI thing ascribes to producers a particular frame of mind in very strong terms. but a very different frame of mind to consumer, who in the end are the same people. And I've been told that.
Well, the something about all this which is very difficult to hear is, I think Kevin said it, the model, if you just look at the model, but that's, it doesn't matter very much.
I'm totally in accord with that. I think it matters much less even than is implied here.
On the other
hand, what did you just say?
I'm sorry. If you solve the model with small deficits and with big deficits, it matters far less than the rhetoric from Washington suggests it ought to matter.
Okay.
On the other hand, we didn't capture the decline in the non-residential investment. So there is something going on. The psychological factors are very real. Looking to the model and simulating the model and expecting it to answer them is asking more of it than it can deliver, since we haven't had this kind of period over the period during which we fitted the equation. So what I'm suggesting is that we have to make up our mind about some imponderable psychological factors. And then we don't have the benefit of equations fit over the last 10 years to tell us what they're going to do, which makes it very hard for any of us to make forecasts of a normal kind of variety. And that's
no kidding. I have this envelope back, which is available.
Let's face it, that is the name of this game.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't see any way around it. I think one of the things that we've
identified. But what does that imply then?
That's one way of doing it. But another way of doing it is to identify what the key assumptions are that went into this forecast. And then I think we've got to do a very serious assessment of what could go wrong in those assumptions. And I think we started a little bit with the budget deficits. And, you know, one of the ideas, I think the key issue there is, when is there going to be such a decision? Is it going to be tomorrow? Is it going to be December? Is it going to be next March? Heaven forbid. Because I think that has tremendous implications on what that means for Oregon. And I think there are a couple other critical assumptions. I mean, if you narrow down the 2,900 variables into three issues, I think that's what we ought to be looking at.
Charlie, we have to point this, you're right on track, we've got to point this very directly as far as the governor's concerned. He wants to know, is Oregon in a trough,
yeah,
or is it going down? Because that has a lot to do with whether he calls a special session.
Exactly, that's exactly my point. And I think what we've got to decide here in Oregon is whether we're going to bounce around in this trough for a while, or whether we're going to start going up. You know, the last time we were here, we started talking about the saucer and how high the lip of the saucer was, in terms of, you know, we're at the bottom and we're going to be coming up. And I think one of the key issues we ought to be talking about today is how wide the saucer is rather than how high the lip is. Okay? We got to get over there first.
We need a blackboard to have all of our metaphors on.
I was switching from the saucer to the trawl all the way back, right, but go on. Where the edge is.
Maybe
well,
we want to.
Excuse me, let me just ask Chang your question, and I don't want to cut you off. We have these questions that you want to hit directly. You haven't changed those. The one you sent out. Still want to point to this question.
Oh, I have a feeling I was going to do the same thing. It seems to me we ought to pick one a question and deal with it. We probably ought to start with the budget deficit. And I would volunteer to jump in with what will probably be the gloomiest view around. I think I'm not just sure why this is, but the forecasting economists have been reluctant all along to say that it's going to be as bad as it's been. And I must say, I think Otto's forecast of $125 billion could easily be too optimistic. And that everybody has underestimated the political difficulties. You and I were about to have a quarrel about the president. It's not so much that the president wants deficits, obviously he doesn't want them. But if you ask him to rate in order of priority his three goals, controlling the deficit, raising military, and cutting taxes, he will do it in exactly the inverse order of what I just said.
Wait a minute now. One thing, we're getting very political.
But that's what
we're discussing. Wait a minute.
Exactly the point we're
discussing. He is implying something of the president that, in fact, if you watch the budget negotiations last week, is exactly the opposite of what happened. The Democrats refused to compromise, and the president did. Now, so to blame it on a side is too political. Talk about the debate, but don't try and imply that one person is holding up the budget.
I didn't.
That was the definite implication in that statement, that 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is where the problem is coming from.
No, well, let me finish what I was going to say.
Everybody knows DRI's leaning, so...
But you took the implication.
No. He made a statement earlier that 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue was causing the president.
You didn't hear, but he didn't make any exact
Let's hold it a minute. Let's listen. You don't have to agree with him, but let him finish his statement.
I will say that what I said was that the president, if you asked him his priority in cutting the deficit, raising military spending, and cutting taxes, he would place the deficit as the lowest of those three. He genuinely believes that if he is successful in cutting taxes, the deficit will not, in fact, be as big as everybody else says it's going to be. Now, the Domenici resolution is based on $40 billion in Social Security cuts that the House Republicans have already announced they have no intention of supporting. So, if the House Republicans do what they say they're going to do, and the House Democrats also say that they're not going to do it, then the only way to control the deficit is to cut taxes, to cut back on the tax cut, or to cut military spending, something the president has shown.
Or raise taxes.
Well, all right. You have to raise taxes or cut the military increase. And so far, the president has shown no willingness to do that. I guess what I'm saying to you is,
My disagreement, though. In fact, the negotiations last week was he gave on defense spending and he gave on taxes.
The taxes
now,
would
I'm not
be
saying
on
he gave the whole way. I'm just saying that you're implying something that isn't fair, in fact. He did give on both. It's the Democrats that have not given on the position of Social Security or entitlements.
But the Democrats, you see, it's not a question of blame. Each side has come up with something that they are willing to give on. The Democrats are perfectly willing to cut defense spending more and to raise taxes. My point is not so much...
They're not giving, though. That's been their position all along.
But I mean, look, it's not a question of who's to blame. All I'm really trying to say is that the ways that each side proposes to cut the deficit are mutually inconsistent. And to assume that because they're both willing to do it, when they're not willing to do it the same way, is all I'm trying to get at. It's highly possible that it isn't going to happen.
My argument is it's going to be a matter of magnitude.
Well, it's all a question of size and timing.
You're implying it's not going to happen at all. Yes, but he's implying it's not going to happen at all. It is a matter of magnitude, because there's already been give on both taxes, and all it's going to end up is what taxes are we're going to increase.
No, but what's
is it going to be an oil tax?
I don't understand how sensitive, why you're that sensitive to what Ed has stated. He said, let me lay out the reasons I think it's gloomier than...